Welcome to the walkthrough.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome to the week 7 edition of the walkthrough. I'm your host, Matty Kiwum, joined, of course, by my right hand man. It feels like forever ago, yet it was just a week ago we were together in Charleston, South Carolina. Cody Carpentier, how the hell you doing, my friend?
I'm doing fantastic, brother. Another week in the books. I say it every week, but it's flying by, brother. It especially flew by this past week because I was in a bit of a daze for like 5 days while enjoying and indulging in the great Charleston food and beverage scene with my best friend in the world, Mr. Matty Kiwum, and his wife.
Now, I mean, we tore it up. It was a great weekend. I was making this joke to you yesterday. My first day back in the gym, we hit the sauna. And I was sweating out bone marrow and Mongolian meatballs and tuna poke bowls and about 6 bottles of tequila is what it felt like. But it was a great weekend down there. Very excited to have done it. Definitely miss being out there and hanging out with you and Steph and everything. It was a great time. But another week down. And a lot of teams now, Cody, are staring at the fork in the fantasy football road. Are they going to make the playoffs? Or are they going to end things early and turn to fantasy basketball, DFS, or what have you? Big week here in week 7.
Can I ask you one question? Because typically we don't talk about Thursday night football, right?
No, because by the time this drops, it's already over,
right? But this Thursday night football game feels like maybe an anomaly, I guess, is maybe the word I'm looking for here, with all the injuries, with New Orleans being completely just wrecked on the offensive side of the ball. Denver, no Pat Surtain. You guys, again, will have already watched this game by the time this drops. My question, Matty, and again, this doesn't really matter to the totality of the show, which is my personal interest, my personal wonder, is with Rashid Shaheed and Chris Olave out and Taysom Hill doubtful, you're going to look like a donk or you're going to look like a genius? This game happened last night when people are listening to this. We're recording this at 10 o'clock in the morning on Thursday. People are going to be listening to this on Friday or Saturday. Mason Tipton, is that your highest ranked New Orleans Saint outside of Kamara?
I believe it's Bub Means.
Bub Means? Is that the route you're going?
I believe it's Bub Means, but I got to be honest, I do not have him ranked all that high. This is a Kamara 12 target game, or it's a complete. You know what? I'm not even going to try to predict this game because it's absolutely bonkers. It's the return of Sean Payton. It's Bo Nix is good in fantasy, but not really great in real life. And Spencer Rattler was better in real life, but not really great in fantasy. I don't know how it's going to play out. No Pat Surtain, but no problem. I mean, there's no really pass catcher of threat, but someone's got to catch the ball.
This has like 9.3, 9.6 written all over it.
Doesn't it? It feels like a game that Sean Payton will be happy as long as Bo Nix keeps it under control, his defense wins the game, and they win 9.6.
All right. I'll go 16-6 final score.
16-6 final score.
Mason Tipton has like 74 yards and a touchdown.
So Mason Tipton's your guy. I'm gonna go with 13-3.
Gosh.
That's what I'm going to go with.
Y'all are going to know before us. This is going to come out on Friday morning or whatever, and you'll be like, yeah, these idiots, man. This game was 42-27. What are you talking about? No, I mean, this is a complete.
Good. I mean, hell.
I just wanted to bring it up to start the show. Just, I mean, it's the grenade, I guess, to roll, but I figured it wouldn't take us too far off path because I just think this is an anomaly of a Thursday night football game, so I wanted to hindsight it.
Yeah, I mean, they could have easily just suited up Bishop Gorman and fucking Latter-day Saint Mayo Del Mar. What's the school in California? The high school is the point.
Bishop, I guess, Sycamore? I'm trying to make.
Yeah. But anyway, that's our Thursday night preview that you'll be reviewing. You'll already know what's happening because we record these, of course, on Thursday. But if you're new to the show, thank you. Welcome. Join in and take a seat. We go through every single game on the weekly slate. And this week, we have another morning game starting us off. The New England Patriots and the Jacksonville Jaguars. Clash of 1-5 teams in London. Over under of 42.5. Seems high. I said the question mark. Maybe Drake May effect. I don't know. Bad teams. Who knows? But the Patriots are getting 5.5 points as visiting teams, we'll call it, because they're both on the road. Who gets right in this game? Let's just start there. Who gets right, Cody?
Who cares? Who cares who gets right? I mean, there's 2-1-5 football teams where the only thing we want as American citizens out of this game is for the English people to not think that this game sucks and that the NFL is a bad product, because that's what they're getting. They're getting a bad product in the 1-5 Patriots and the 1-5 Jaguars right now. We want to see what Drake May, you know, if he can take that step forward. I mean, Drake May right now, you know, has over under Maddie 3.5 weeks. I think that you'll be like, well, this guy's probably better than Trevor Lawrence, but he could do it today instead. He could beat Trevor Lawrence Sunday morning and definitively look better than Trevor Lawrence with the trajectory of the Jaguars right now. Who's to say that we aren't, you know, another Robert Saleh situation where Saleh comes back from losing overseas, comes over for a week, and then he's fired. Doug Peterson, same thing. If the Patriots beat the Jags, this is as good as done. This is as good as done. I heard some Shane Waldron potential. You know, I was listening to the guys on Established the Run. They're like, oh yeah, Shane Waldron is your next Jaguars coach. That's exactly how that'll go. I think it was more of a joke than anything, Maddie. I see your eyebrows going, what the hell?
Yeah, I was like, why?
Mine. This team needs a like Vrabel type mentality. We've all heard the Belichick stuff, but I think Belichick's going to have his choice. I don't think he's going to pick Jacksonville. I don't know what Jacksonville's going to do. This thing is, I would say, on the verge of a reset. But as far as the team goes, as far as the week goes in fantasy football, again, it's the Patriots, and it's going to be really tough for me to say, yeah, definitively go and do this. You know, when we're looking at like Kayshon Boutte, 3 for 3 targets, 3 receptions, scores a touchdown. Like I love me some Kayshon Boutte, but am I going to trust that? Am I going to believe that? Am I going to ride with these tight ends? Am I going to ride with Gibson, who kind of screwed us the other week? Like, I don't really love much of anything on the New England side. And Jacksonville, they seem to not trust Bigsby in the passing game and in the protection game. Etienne's hurt. Etienne's borderline unplayable at this point. We talked about it on the hurdle this week. 3 carries, a target. -1 yard overall. You can't play him at this point until he proves to you he's healthy, which is just straight up the truth. So what do you do in Jacksonville? Is it as simple as saying, well, I mean, you can still trust Christian Kirk, right? 9.9 fantasy points per game. That's not exactly, you know, his game. 4 receptions, 6.5 targets per game. I don't know. I don't really know who you can trust in this entire game. Maybe Brian Thomas, but even that, he's probably going to end up mostly on Gonzalez.
He could also drop a touchdown, and then you're kind of screwed. ETN has been one of the biggest disappointments on the entire season. He's now fallen to 98th overall in 1QB wins over replacement. He's in similar boat to players like Keenan Allen, who missed multiple games, Tyrann Tracy, who's only played the last 2 games. It's not good for ETN, and I'm not going to be playing him this week. I don't even have him ranked. I think that he sits.
Wow.
Ingram, you're playing Ingram. 10 targets, 10 catches last week.
That's a good point.
On the Patriots side of things, I called it last week. I would play Drake May over Trevor Lawrence. I called it correct. This week, I am calling it the exact same way. May at QB 17, Lawrence at QB 23. So again, I'm not in the Trevor Lawrence business for week 7. The only player that I will bring up before we move on, Pop Douglas. So now we've seen Douglas do it 3 out of the last 4. We've seen him survive the QB change, and he just continues to be the number one target for the New England Patriots. Last week, 21 fantasy points, 9 targets, 6 catches, 92 yards. That is back-to-back 9 target weeks and 3 9 target games out of the last 4 contests. The one exception, of course, being the 49ers, where they got absolutely mollywopped. I got him at wide receiver 24. I think in your PPR formats, he's a must play. He's a good player. He's getting the confidence from, you know, the rookie quarterback, Drake May, saying you can't even cover him in a phone book. Shout out John Sadick, my buddy. He wouldn't let me live that down at the gym. He's been high on Drake May. And Jalen Polk, for what it's worth, what we're hearing up here in New England is this is a complete imploding as of right now, of course, he can right the ship. He's only a handful of games into his whole career. We like the prospect. We like the skill set. But bad body language, bad practices, drops all the time. That's the topic of conversation is, can he hold on to the ball? It's not – it just seems like it's a rookie wall type of blockade. So I don't think we get a lot of Jalen Polk this season. Of course, I'd love to be wrong because I love the prospect and I love the profile. But as of right now, Pop Douglas is the guy that I will play from New England Patriots. And Antonio Gibson, if you have to, I have him ranked at 15, but I feel yucky about it. I think that's going to come on down. That's going to come down. It doesn't seem like Stevenson's going to play, though. I will also say this, bit of a conspiracy theory. I have this conspiracy theory in mind that the reason why Drake May played last week and not the week before and why it was seemed so random was that the NFL nudged Robert Kraft and the Patriots, who are not the Patriots that they were a few years ago, don't have the influence, the power. And Goodell said, if you send Brissett to London, I will make your lives a living hell. This is not going to go well. You're not going to like what the behind-the-scenes workings of agent-commissioner relationships can go. And he said, Gerard, we're going to play Drake May in London. And he said, well, then I got to get him in there now to get a game under his belt. Because can you imagine, you talk about product, the Jaguars, after they sucked, going out there 2 weeks in a row, you want the rookie, Caleb May, to do well. He did. You want the rookie, Drake May, to do well. He might. He will. Let's say that. I'll be confident that he will. He'll be a top 20 play. Goodell said, buddy, listen, Kraft, do you want another gate? You're the king of gates. Spy gate. Deflate gate. You're the king of gate. Massage gate. You don't want that type of smoke. Drake May's in, but we don't care. He works for fantasy football. The next game, Battle of the Birds, the 3-3 Seahawks.
Hey, where do you have Ramondre?
I didn't rank him.
Fair.
I didn't rank him. He's not practicing.
What about Butte?
Butte.
He ran the most routes on the team last week.
I don't care about routes. He made one play. I'd never trust one play. He does it this week. Okay, you're on the radar.
That's what I'm asking. I think the people need to know this. Like what?
I didn't even rank him.
It 22 routes the week before, 32 this week, led the team. Like, that's what I'm asking is, like, it's second team corollary with Drake.
Yeah, I don't believe in that either, though. I think that's Fugazi. So I've given it zero credit. You will not. I don't have him ranked. He's outside of my top 75. I won't put him in unless I see it again in one or two ways. Another big play, a la Rashid Shaheed. But you just, I was the guy who had Shaheed in the 40s, you know, week three, whatever it was. If that's your bag, you better be fucking DeSean Jackson or I'm not going to buy into it. And three targets, 3 catches, 50-something yards, a touchdown, all coming on a 46-yard touchdown. So nothing after that. I don't care if you're a wind sprinter. I want nothing to do with that profile until you prove it in multiple weeks. So I'm okay being behind on Booty. I'm not playing cash on Booty. I'd play Polk over Booty. I'd play Bub Means after he has 100 catches on Thursday night that were semi-predicted. I
don't think you're wrong.
I'm just not going to buy into Alec Pierce. I still have him at 73 and he's done it multiple weeks. He's had ridiculous games multiple weeks. I don't care because then he could have zero like he did last week and totally pork you. So I never lean on those type of players like Jalen Coker. We'll talk about him here in a little bit. We'll talk about him in a little bit. We'll get to that game. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at on those players. The next game, like we were saying, it's the Seahawks 3-3 heading to the dirty south to play the Atlanta 4-2 Falcons. I'm a little shocked by that. The line of 51, Cody. It's basically a pick 'em game. The Seahawks are getting 3 points as road dogs. That's apropos. But the 51 point over under on DraftKings, is this the fantasy shootout of the week?
No. Atlanta's, you know, played two of the last three at home. The total was 50, 66, and 58. That was against the Saints, Bucks, and Panthers. This Seattle defense, I think is a little bit better than those. I know they just gave up 36 at home to the Niners and 29 the week before to the Giants, but I don't think this is just going to automatically be the shootout that the math equates to. These teams are two teams going kind of in opposite directions. Seattle started the season out 3-0. Now they're 0-3. The Atlanta Falcons started out 1-2. Now they're 4-2. It's a weird matchup. I don't know if I believe it's the shootout of the week. I think there's going to be plenty of opportunities for these teams to score points. But to be honest with you, I'd lean more into that Texan-Packer game. I'd probably lean more into that Charger Cardinal game on Monday night. As far as it, that sounds kind of crazy, but I think I like those two games better than I'd like this one.
This is my shootout of the week. If it was in Texas, if it was Packers on the road in Houston, that would probably be my game. The Lambeau factor is enough to bump it down. And you're absolutely bananas to think that the Cardinals, Chargers are going to have a shootout.
Cardinals are so flip-flop. You're bananas. They're too flip. They're so flip floppy that I think that that's a game that can hit 50. I don't know what the total is right now. I think the total is probably 50, 40. Golly, what is it? 44 and a half, 46 and a half, 43 and a half. I think that game's going through that.
The only way that we'll talk about that game, but the only way that game's going over 50 is if the Chargers scored 42.
Also, you got to be careful with the Green Bay game. You got to be careful with the Green Bay stuff because the weather's supposed to be 70 and sunny. 43% humidity. That is the definition of football weather.
Yeah, I don't care. That's fine. It could be my second shootout of the week with that news.
Okay.
This is the reason being, so now we look at and basically I'm going to talk about all this stuff, and the fantasy takeaway is start the guys you've been starting. There's no shocker for me. Kenneth Walker's a top 10 play. DK Metcalf, Drake London are definite plays. JSN's a top 31 receiver for me. Tyler Lockett's a I need someone in my flex type play. You're gonna play everything as astute as they've been played. The thing I want to say about Walker, and then I'll get back to the big picture of the scoring. The thing I cannot get my head around with Kenneth Walker this season, and more importantly, since he came back from the oblique, 4, 5, and 6. 5 targets, 8 targets, 8 targets, 4 catches, 7 catches, 8 catches. This is one of the we are in a consensus throughout the football universe that this guy's one of the best runners in the NFL. His red flag's always been the fact that he's not going to be a difference maker in the passing game. And now we're looking at this guy absolutely dominating. He's got a 65% snap share, but a 14.5% target share. The fifth highest in football at running back. So I love Kenneth Walker. He's a destroyer of worlds until seen otherwise. So I love him in this matchup. But the reason why I think the matchup goes over and why I will put some shillings on the over, big plays. This game could be stagnant for a quarter and a half. Won't matter. Bijan 75-yard touchdown. DK Metcalf answers with a 62-yard touchdown. At the end, when inexperience unravels and falls apart, you have Geno Smith and Kirk Cousins. These guys will be dialed as the game goes on. One team could go under by 3 touchdowns. It won't matter. Everything is aligning here. Health of the teams right now. I mean, it is Thursday. I guess things could happen, but it seems like everyone's going to be healthy in terms of fantasy. This feels like the shootout of the week. And I don't believe it started over 50. The fact that it climbed over 50 just kind of confirms that for me. So I'm going to take the over. This is the game of the week. The next matchup is not really the matchup of the week. It has kind of the fantasy kryptonite taking part. The Tennessee Titans are 1-4, and they travel to Orchard Park to play the Buffalo Bills, who are 4-2, the fourth seed in the AFC. Man, this is a bad line. This game's lining up pretty poorly for potentially both teams on a fantasy sense. Titans are getting almost 10 points on the road, 9.5-point road dogs. Over under 41 stinks. Let's start here. Where do you have Josh Allen? And then just kind of trickle into the rest of the weapons here.
Well, Josh Allen's going to be up towards the top. I got him as my quarterback 5 this week. I don't think he'll ever fall below top 5. Tennessee's a respectable defense, but they're not great. It's a bottom 12 matchup on the Roster Watch matchup tool. But I think the question everybody wants to ask is, do we think Amari Cooper's going to play? And if so, where is he going to kind of slot in? I put him in tentatively at 37. I think Legarius Sneed news came out this morning officially. I should probably pull it up. I read it like an hour ago. Where did it go here? Did not practice. So
huge.
That's their best cornerback, right? On paper and on the field. And as far as what Amari Cooper's done to this point this year, everybody knows the career week by week. I mean, we literally named an award after it on the hurdle because of kind of what Cooper does on a week-to-week basis. He had that number, that wide receiver 5 game in week 3 for Cleveland, but you can go back year after year after year where he goes top 10 out to the top 50 in any given week. And he's been inside the top 50 3 times this season out of 6 games, and 2 of those were 35 and 42, wide receiver 35 and 42. So this is the best quarterback he'll ever have played with in his life, Josh Allen. And I don't know how long it's going to take for him to get ramped up or the connection to be created between these guys. It took a little bit of time for Keon Coleman. I still wouldn't say it's there with Keon Coleman. And again, that's been something that's been working for what now 3 months. And there's a reason they went out and got Cooper. So I'll be interested to see what that looks like on Sunday. I'm not going to make a bullish move on Cooper and make him some top 20 play or anything right away. But I do think that there'll be enough targets pushed his direction. They'll have certain routes built for Amari Cooper in this game that I think he's playable if he's active. I'm assuming he's going to be active. He'll be playable.
I agree. I completely agree with the Amari Cooper sentiment. I have him at wide receiver 30, and that's with expectations that we see him practice in full, and it seemed there's no hitches, and he's active. If there's a limited practice in terms of getting in there, if you hear reports that he hasn't really been able to be in the building much this week, he'll drop considerably. This is his peak value for me. I'm not going any higher than 30, even if I hear reports that Josh Allen is going to go to him and go to him often. I'm just going to wait. The matchup to me screams the biggest gap of a 13-0 game, if that makes sense. Just complete control, but they don't have to come out and go crazy. They don't have to unveil things in terms of the overall offense. I do have Josh Allen at 3. I'll never everything you just said. I agree. I'm never gonna drop him in my rankings. Kincaid, I do have him outside of my top 10. Last week was his best week and it was fine. What I will say about Amari Cooper, and then I'm going to ask you one more question because we're not really talking about anything on the Titan side. It's Tony Pollard and it's nothing else.
Yep.
But I do have one more question regarding the Bills, and I have a statement about the Bills and Amari Cooper, and then I have a question for you about the Buffalo Bills offense. If you have someone in your league that just put Amari Cooper on the block thinking they're going to sell at peak value, buy it. Amari Cooper, over the course of his career, he's racked up 8,000 yard seasons, 1,250 last year. This year he could have been on. If he started with the Bills, how much would he have right now? 600 yards? Like seriously, how much would he have? And next week, look at the schedule. The Bills play the Seattle Seahawks. It's only going to take a week, people. Like you said, they went out and got Cooper for a reason, and it was because they didn't believe that they had the haymaker. They didn't believe that they had the right combination to take down the Stephon Diggs and CJ Stroud, the Travis Kelce's and Patrick Mahomes. Because the secret to winning in sports is when the batter knows you're throwing a fastball, you say, "I don't give a fuck. I'm throwing the fastball because my stuff has to beat your skill." And this is why they got Amari Cooper.
Would you rather be the Bills and have Amari Cooper and Keon Coleman, or be the Chiefs and have Xavier Worthy?
Because that's the trade. I mean, it's not even a question. It's not even a question. I would rather have Amari Cooper right now than Xavier Worthy. One for one in the NFL and in fantasy.
What situation would you prefer for Amari Cooper? Buffalo right now, or hypothetically, he's being traded to Buffalo right now, or hypothetically, he would have been traded to Kansas City right now.
To Buffalo. They're going to need him to handle 14 targets on multiple occasions this year. That's the nature of the offense. A Cooper.
Buffalo wins the trade.
Buffalo, yeah, I guess you could say Buffalo wins the trade. And I will say this, too, in terms of a big picture thing. The vision was the ways you could sneakily use Xavier Worthy because you had Hollywood Brown, Rashee Rice, and Travis Kelce. They never had Hollywood Brown. They already lost Rashee Rice. So now he's just out in the open. It's easy to cover Xavier Worthy when that's the only show in town. That's why we saw Juju go crazy already, because you have to allocate the resources to stop the deep ball with Worthy. But the idea was to have a guy you can't stop in the middle, a tight end you can't stop anywhere, and two outside speed races that you can't stop without safeties over the top. It all fell apart. So I think in the long run, we'll still like it for the Chiefs and for Xavier Worthy. But right now, yes. Right now, we're doing week 7, the walkthrough. We got to talk about it now. The Bills won because Amari can be the lifeboat when the offense is drowning. And the Chiefs' lifeboat would always be Kelce, even if Cooper went there. So I guess that's my long-winded way to say, yeah, I would rather Cooper have gone to the Bills for fantasy. This next game we're going to talk about here, the Cincinnati Bengals take on the division rival Cleveland Browns, a battle of 4-2 or 2-4. Geez, Freudian slip. Bengals are underachieving. against the 1-5 Browns, which we kind of expected to suck. Over under 41.5 kind of sucks. Browns are home dogs by 5.5. Just kind of give me the lay of the land here, Cody, because I'm a bit, I'm doing my ranks. I was a bit kind of uninspired, to say the least, with this matchup.
Well, first off, the Cleveland Browns are supposed to get Nick Chubb back, but there's no set snap count, according to CBS right now. So as the game gets closer, I think we're going to get a better view. We'll probably get a, you know, some type of, I would bet some type of, you know, full blown Jay Glazer thing, or maybe a Shefty midnight tweet on Saturday night, or Glazer on Sunday morning, something that's going to give us a little bit of a more inside view of the total, expectation of output for Nick Chubb. Alex went ahead and put Chubb at running back. Can you guess?
Because you brought it up this way, I'm going to say like 12.
No, not quite. I would text him and yell at him, be 23. Okay. But it still feels hot right now.
I'm at 33, so that is a little hot for me, yeah.
I mean, I didn't even rank him because I just wanted to wait. I'm not ready to just, oh, yeah. Like, I was ready before the season. I was ready to I was drafting him. That was a fuck up on my end to draft him. I thought it was a value to get in the double-digit rounds, but, and now we're sitting here week 7. He's going to make his debut. I'm worried, but.
Yeah, and it seems like a ramp-up.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be like
about it's a ramp-up thing.
I don't know if, I could be wrong here too, but I don't know if they're going to come in and be like, yo, Nick Chubb's going to get 25 touches because this team sucks and we need him. So I didn't rank him yet. So I'm kind of just going to sit and hold by on that. You can follow at Matty Q and at Cody Carpentier on social media if you want updated Nick Chubb stuff. I know we're both going to be doing shows on Sunday morning as well. If you want to tap in for those on the Roster Watch or the South Harmon YouTube channels, we'll both be live to crack a dawn. At receiver, though, Matty, no Amari Cooper here. I like Njoku quite a bit. I put Njoku up to tight end 9. I kind of want to go higher. I kind of want to get him up to like, you know, 6-7, which is McBride and Tucker Kraft for me. I kind of want to put Njoku up to there. But at receiver, I did put Judy up to 32.
So you like, let me ask you this way, because I don't think the ranking is egregious, but I need to ask your thoughts behind it. Are you excited for Judy now that Cooper's been traded? Like, is this do you think it's 32 on the way to 23, or what are your thoughts now on Judy? Because I have some thoughts on Judy.
I don't think it's excited as much as it is understanding that targets need to go somewhere, and that Judy, the first 4 weeks of the season, had 29 targets, and he was a top 35 guy 3 of those first 4 weeks. And the 1 week he wasn't was the 1 week that Cooper went nuclear in week 3, and Judy was wide receiver 50, whereas Cooper was 5. These last 2 weeks, we saw Judy's targets go down to 3, but he still ran plenty of routes. He was still in on 87% of routes, which in week 6 was more than Cooper ran. I think he's pretty clearly the number 2. I know for a few weeks there, I was like, Judy's basically the number 1, and then that, you know, nuclear game happened with Cooper, but now Cooper's gone. So I think those two things can be the same. I'm not excited about Judy, but I understand that I think value is going to be held in Judy's arms for the next couple of weeks until, you know, when Elijah Moore pops his head and says, you know, I want an opportunity, or Jalen Darden or Cedric Tillman. Like, this is going to be a bad team down the stretch. And I think things could change with quarterback play. I think things could change with Nick Chubb entering the fray. How dominant is David Njoku? Is he the new Evan Ingram situation where he's just going to be the target leader in any given week? I think things can change, but I guess for now, I would just lean back on our arches and say, well, Judy's going to get targets, at least for the next couple of weeks. And I feel pretty good about that. So, yeah, I mean, I guess I'd say where I currently have him, which is, again, here we go. Alex changed the whole page.com. 32 on his way to 22. Like, I don't think that's wrong. But like I said, I'm not excited about it.
You've inspired me, my friend. You inspired me to move Jerry Judy up my rankings. So he started the show at wide receiver 51, and you've convinced me to move him all the way up to wide receiver 50. So good job. Thank you for the inspiration.
Jesus Christ.
You know, Amari Cooper is just a far better player, and the targets were so bad.
I don't think you're wrong.
53 targets. He had 53 targets. So I give the if you just switch the roles, just give Judy Moore bad targets. It's not going to elevate him for me. I don't see much value there. And then when I look at what he's done, he's outside of the top 100 WARP player. A 1.83 makes him wide receiver 53 on the season. He's got a sub 0.05 WARP per game. He's just not good. And the quarterback is worse. So I'm not excited at all about Judy's expectations. I will say this, though, about Chubb, and then we'll talk real quick about the Bengals. There is a world where they just let him go play so that they can trade him, because he is a free agent after this year. And if they're looking to garner some assets to try to make moves in the offseason, you know, getting a third from Amari by most is considered a pretty good return. Maybe they go out there and say, you know what, Nick, can you handle 20? We're going to give you 20. We're going to let you do your thing. You'll probably grind it out for a 108 and a tutty, and then we'll trade you for a sixth, and then we'll get you out of this wasteland. That's my only hope. But I think that the more logical thing on Chubb is you just kind of read the tea leaves, follow the progression. They opened the window. He didn't play for 3 weeks. Took him all 21 days to come back to play. His first full practice was just this week.
I'm not fucking with it.
I'm not really fucking with it. I'm not really in love with Nick Chubb this week. I got him at running back 33. Could see him going as high as 29. Not that high, no matter how the reports sparse out. Real quick, just give me some bullet points on Burrow and his pass catchers.
Well, I think this is, you just have to continue to do with what they're showing you, right? The Lombardi has the famous line of saying, and I think most GMs believe this, when a player shows you who they are, you have to believe them positively and negatively. And Burrow is a QB1. He's going to be a top 12 option, just the way it is right now with this offense. They're scoring points. Their defense is not great. Again, scoring points up until this last game against the Giants, which was, for all intents and purposes, one of the worst games of the year until Thursday Night Football tonight. I think they're going to continue to score points, though. And I think when you look at Jamar Chase, he has to be unequivocally a top five play for you in this game. T. Higgins unequivocally has to be a top 24 play for you in this game. And I think even Yosavash, whichever guy you want to lean into, Yosavash or, you know, one of the tight ends, I think have to be respected and potentially utilized as fringe flex plays in any given week. I mean, I know it's only a guy that's averaging four targets a game, but it is a good matchup here against Cleveland.
Next matchup on the schedule, the Houston Texans are 5-1, but they head to Lambeau to take on the 4-2 Green Bay Packers. The Packers are giving up 3 points as home favorites. Over under of 47.5 clears that 45 point threshold, so it's worth being a little excited. Let's start with the Houston Texans in the return of Joe Mixon. Where do you have Joe Mixon this week, and where do you have him rest of the season?
This is tough. I have him top 12 this week. I have him right there at like 10, 11. Rest of season, I think it's health dependent. This matchup is middling.
Let's just say he's healthy.
Right directly in the middle of the pack this week as far as the matchup goes. But I still have him ranked ahead of Brian Robinson. And, you know, I know Brian Robinson's coming off injury, but he's got the number one matchup in the week against Carolina. Mm-hmm. So that kind of gives you where I feel about Mixon. And obviously his opportunities averaging 20 touches a game, which is up there with the best running backs right now in all of the NFL. Kamara's got 22, Hunt averaging 22, Kyren and Saquon averaging 21. Derrick Henry, Jordan Mason, Joe Mixon averaging 20. He's up there right in that mess. So I like where Mixon's at. Rest of season, like I said, if he's healthy, like you said, it's tough for you not to call this guy. I don't have it officially ranked out, but I would say probably 7 or 8.
I think that's beyond fair. I have him at 8 this week, and I think 7 or 8 rest of season, you know, depending on health, obviously, it's a good call. He's just been dynamite. In terms of the fantasy game, I would say overall kind of approach these players on your fantasy rosters as you have, but err on the side of caution just a tad, because both teams are really good defensively, can cause a lot of havoc getting after the quarterback. But of course, you know, Diggs for me, still top five option as the wide receiver one for CJ Stroud. The targets will be there when they need to be. The efficiency will be there when it needs to be. We saw it last week, 8 targets, 7 catches, 80 yards, and a tutty. Just razor. Where do you have Tank Dell this week? Because he had a good game against the Pats last week.
Yeah. Yeah. But this is the thing. Like, I want to continue to be ahead on Tank, but I just have this internal hesitance with Tank. I have Diggs at 13 and Tank at 20. I told you a minute ago, I like this one as a shootout. And the reason, the kind of the math when I do that is sometimes when I look at my quarterback ranks, and I just strictly will use my quarterback ranks to kind of gauge where my mind is for DFS and for shootouts. And I have both Stroud and Love as top nine plays, which I would assume most do. But I think that gives me a good grasp on where things are. Like, I look at, you know, like the Tampa and Baltimore game, I got both those guys at top six plays, Baker and Lamar. Hope that makes sense. But
no, it definitely does. It definitely does. And this is what I'll add to that, just to kind of let our listeners kind of see through behind the, you know, through the rabbit hole a little bit. I have Love and Stroud 6 and 7. If I thought this game was more of a lock of a shootout, if I was a little bit more confident, they'd probably be 2 and 3. So I'm excited about this matchup. I'm not fading this matchup. I'm just saying a little bit on the card. I would. If I was as confident that this was going to shoot out like I am the Seattle Seahawks and the Atlanta Falcons, and I was projecting it to shoot out that strongly, they would be 2 and 3 for me.
So
they're not. They're 6 and 7.
Who would eat the crow then? Who's your one? Is it Jaden or Lamar?
I have Lamar, Jaden, Allen, Hurts, Mayfield, Love, and Stroud.
So Jaden would be the one eating the dirt.
He would go from 2 to 4. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I was saying. That's what I was asking. Because I have it the inverse. I have Jaden 1, Lamar 2. So I was wondering which way you had it and who would be the one, you know.
Lamar's just been so – I mean, Jaden's been great. But, I mean, he has been like, you know, QB 9, QB 10.
He's had three top five finishes, though.
Right. No, he's been great, and that's why he's my number two. It's not – I'm not fading Jaden Daniels. We'll talk more about him.
Yes, you are. You're fading. What are you talking about? You're fading him. What do you mean you're fading?
Yeah.
Come on. He's number one. If he's not number one, you're fading him. That's the rule.
No. Well, I mean, Lamar's on a different boat. Even in one QB season of leagues, he's the seventh most valuable player in fantasy. He has nearly 8.5 wins over replacement. He's unbelievable this year. So he's the champ. He'll be my number one ranking every time the matchup is favorable. But we'll talk about that match later. We're talking right now about the Packers and the Texans. So let's flip to the Packers side of the ball. Okay, we're both pretty high on Love. Where do you have Josh Jacobs? Because I'm starting to worry a little bit because his production and his volume isn't really translating to big fantasy weeks.
What's this song? Don't you worry, child. Isn't that what it is?
Yeah, there's a song that actually when it was written, and then there's the techno song.
Don't you worry, child.
Kevin's gonna play for you. Don't you worry. So there's probably like an actual song that was written by, you know, instruments and not a laptop, but yeah, and that's no shade to DJs. Some of our DJ listeners are probably gonna be pissed. Pissed.
Don't you worry, Josh Jacobs. He's a top 15 play this week.
But I got him at 14, though. This is a guy that I was putting at like 8 at 7, and now he's
14.
Now he's at 14. Yeah. But still, I think that speaks to the kind of the mediocrity that he's kind of really, you know, posted this year when we were expecting him to be a top 10 warp running back. I would say, at least I was. I know some people were really down on him. But now, he's running back 21 in warp. It's just not been.
Emmanuel Wilson getting 8 touches is not something that I think people will like.
No, but we would have imagined that. People in July, you know, people were freaking, 8 to 10, that's conservative for Marshawn Lloyd and the small calves. He's the new guy.
That's fair. I was never in that train of thought, ever. I never thought Lloyd or Emmanuel Wilson or Pat Taylor, any of these guys was going to take carries away to this extent. But Wilson showing juice, I think that's definitely in the conversation of why Jacobs isn't in the running back, you know, 1 through 4 conversation on a weekly basis. Rather, he's in the 10 through 14 conversation every week. Pollard or Jacobs?
Pollard.
Yep.
Yep. Pollard's been sick. Pollard's been absolutely sick nasty. I mean, Pollard's been a top 30 overall warp player this year. And if you're new to the walkthrough. Warp is wins over replacement player. It's the single best metric in fantasy football in terms of gauging actual value, trade value, perceived value, market value, however you want to look at it in the known universe. And to get it, just head over to southharmonff.com, go to the tools and click the Warp tool, and you can get access for to the best metric in fantasy football. So that is what I mentioned when I mentioned Warp. Obviously, we both got Jaden Reed, the highest ranked receiver for the Packers. Who wins the number two race for you? Christian Watson coming off a big game or Romeo Doubs coming off a bigger game?
I'm not gonna. I had this conversation with Alex and Trash Man, and I've always been the Watson guy. And all of a sudden, they're like, "No, man, Christian Watson, da 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 da." And I go, "But like, why?" And they're like, "Well, he's big play, more consistent, all this." And I'm like, "They're like Romeo Doubs is making his hay off of touchdowns," and I go, well, what the fuck did Christian Watson do all year last year?
All career, period.
Built on fucking touchdowns. Yeah. And I'm not a hater of either one of these guys. I actually like them both, but one guy stays healthy, one guy doesn't. One guy gets targets, one guy is predominantly built on touchdowns. I'm taking the fucking guy that's predominantly gonna get the targets, stay on the field, and then now start to grow into a touchdown role. That's how you mature as a player. I don't think that Watson has the, I don't think you go from being like a Deshaun Watson, Deshaun Jackson. I don't think you go from being this big play touchdown guy to Wandale Robinson.
Right.
But I think Wandale Robinson could go from being Wandale Robinson and, or Josh Downs and grow into a touchdown scoring role, AKA the opportunity's there, but these are of course different body types than those two guys. I just think that Romeo Doubs is one where you start getting him targets and all of a sudden he grows into that touchdown role, which is Davante Adams. Like, I'm not saying he's Davante Adams. I'm not saying that, but
we're old enough to remember Davante Adams was not Davante Adams for a couple of years.
Thank you. So again, I love Christian Watson, but so this week, actually, I'm pretty low on both these guys. Actually, 43 and 49. Doubs is the one ahead.
So I'm not going to
targets.
I'm not going to argue anything you said. I have it ranked opposite. I don't like either, but I have Watson higher. But I do agree from the dynasty fantasy football sentiment. Everything you reasoned, everything you laid out is why I like Doubs so much more than Christian Watson. But if they're both on the field, and if I don't really love either matchup or either possibility, I'm just going to go with this athletic freak that's 6'4". And I'm just going to air that direction. But in terms of my weekly approach, my rest of season Doubs is higher than Watson. In dynasty, Doubs is higher than Watson. I don't like the unreliability. And if we're going to talk about touchdown dependent, I mean, that's literally the only way Christian Watson has fucking made any hay in the NFL. Next matchup we're going to talk about is the Miami Dolphins at the Indianapolis Colts. Yeah, a little bit of that. Not really great. Dolphins are 3-point underdogs, 43.5 over under, not great. I'm just really going to ask you one question, and the rest I think is just kind of self-explanatory. It is what it is. Where do you have Tyreek Hill?
Again, like I just said a minute ago with Chase, you can't not rank this guy in the top five. Alex put him at 12, and I'm ready to, you know, actually, funny thing, I'm going to actually go see him tomorrow morning, and I might kick him in the nuts for it. Because you can't, if Tyreek plays, you can't rank him outside the top, like, six. Top 10 matchup this week against the Colts. Another week of practicing with Huntley. Give me Tyreek Hill as number three.
I got Tyreek Hill at 10, but our path.
Get back here. Come back down to Charleston. I'll kick you right in the nuts.
No, see, I think your logic is right. I just think you've thrown the yo-yo, and yours is as far out as it can go, and mine's a little bit closer to the hand. But we threw the same yo-yo. We understand it the same. It's just at where we're looking at it at this point. But the logic is there. I know what you're saying.
You don't think the bye week helps at all?
Now, let me ask it to you this. No, I don't. Tyler Huntley sucks. Snoop Huntley sucks.
He had 9 targets last 2 weeks ago. He had 9 targets 2 weeks ago, and he jumped up. He was 46, 48, 46. Then he got 9 targets, jumped up to 26. Now you get a bye week in between a good matchup with the Colts.
Right, and that's what makes him receiver 10. If he didn't have the good matchup, he'd be – I would have him closer with Alex. I'd have him a little bit lower. I'm pushing 15. The reason why he's at 10 is because he's Tyreek fucking Hill. in those nine targets, he can go bananas. And as long if I have him at 10, he's a guaranteed play. I am playing him anywhere that I have Tyreek Hill. I don't really care. I want to ask you this, though, before we move on. In terms of the Colts, the way you've been approaching it is the way you should approach it. They're not great. They have some benefits. The whole thing with Anthony Richardson is a complete crapshoot. I don't know what to say about that. But the Colts defense, they utilize zone coverage 85.8% of the time. That's the second highest in the NFL. Does that help or hurt the expectations for Tyreek Hill?
I think it helps him. I think what I'm most interested in this entire game is what happens past Tyreek Hill. What happens with Waddle and what happens with his backfield?
Waddle, I mean, I've sunk Waddle in my rankings, and Waddle has a little bit of that. I'm just not ever out on Waddle, so I'm at receiver 34. Yeah. But that's because he's Jalen Waddle, not because of any other reason. And A-Chain, I'm at running back 19 because I don't – and I'm going to take a small victory lap on A-Chain because it hasn't happened to the effect where people victory lap. And I don't like the victory lap injuries. It makes me kind of feel gross, to be honest. But the reason why I was never high on A-Chain is because he can leave a game in the first quarter 3 weeks in a row. And now he just can let the player tell you who they were. Right, Michael Lombardi? And you still have an open invitation to come on the walkthrough. He's so unreliable. So I have him at 19. I'm not excited about it. I think in terms of my rate, I have Mostert at 38. I could see myself getting a little bit higher on Mostert because he looked pretty good 2 weeks ago against the Patriots. I know it was ugly, but 11 fantasy points, he grinded it out. That's the type of performances, like, I'll lean on that. When you could grind me 11, well, then you could score me 20 if things go your way. So that's kind of how I see what going after Hill. In terms of the zone, I think it helps because I think it could help him convert on more of those nine targets. I think it probably lessens the big play ability, but if he could be seven, if he catches seven balls, it's going to be for 80 yards. I mean, it's Tyreek fucking Hill. And yeah. the worry is nine targets catches three of them, that with zone coverage, he's going to be able to find soft spots in the zone. He's unbelievable at that. So I think this is going to elevate his floor and keep his ceiling, you know, kind of where it is. Maybe I am low on 10. Maybe I will move him up after this episode. Real quick, one sentence answer. Or you can just give me the number and we can move on. Anthony Richardson's ranking.
You really want to know this?
Real quick, yeah.
Quarterback 23.
It feels right. I'm at 14 because I'm a bitch at it. I'm a little nervous. But, I mean.
Where do you have Joe Flacco at?
I didn't rank him.
Quarterback 30.
So you think he comes in? I'm actually dropping Richardson behind Geno Smith. And
I'm not saying he's not going to come in. I'm putting him in here. I also put Jameis in here. Starters in here. I put Jameis, I put Flacco, and I put both the Pittsburgh guys.
I have just both the Pittsburgh guys because they're playing with my emotions. Yeah. Let's move on to the next game. Probably, well, without a doubt, the most hype game, best game on the slate. But is it going to be a shootout? We kind of talked about this on the Hurdle live in Charleston. The 4-1 Detroit Motor City Kitties head to their vaunted rivals, the undefeated 5-0 Minnesota Vikings. 1.5-point underdogs are the Detroit Lions, so it's essentially a pick 'em. Okay, over under of 51. Vegas thinks points. So should we expect fantasy points, Cody?
I think this is going to be a good, interesting game. Nobody, to be honest with you, nobody's really pressed Minnesota. Green Bay, the score makes it look like that, but
They kicked the shit out of them.
Yeah, they kicked the shit out of them. And they just played the second half different. The Jets game was fine, but I think I blame that really more on Darnold playing down than anything. I'm going to be interested to see what this Lions team does after a cakewalk of the Cowboys, a second road game in a row after bye, down Aiden Hutchinson. We talked about this on the Hurdle. This is a divisional game that's always played close. This is going to be guru on guru, O-line on D-line, or O-line, offense on defense. And I like Flores here. As far as fantasy points go, I think you still ramp up all your dudes. I think as far as the running backs go, I still have Gibbs ranked pretty aggressively as a top 10 guy. It's a bottom five matchup against the Vikings. I still have him ranked rather aggressively. Montgomery's still a top 24 guy. In Minnesota, Chandler is my highest ranked running back at running back 24. I'm not expecting Jones to play. They just traded for Cam Akers. Jones didn't practice yesterday with a hip. That's worrisome to me. especially coming out of a bye. We saw him stand on the sideline with the ice pack against the against the Packers in that game. But my wide receiver one and two here are in fact Jet and Amon-Ra.
I don't really have much to add there. I'm not going to bog the listeners down with just repeating what you said. I am at top four or top three guys, one and three. So I love it. I think it's a great football game. I'm very excited to see how it goes. I just made the switch. I just moved Ty Chandler in Aaron Jones' spot and moved Aaron Jones into Ty Chandler's spot, given your just what you just brought up. I think that is the way I should have it, which means I have Chandler at running back 22. Like Chandler. I like all the players. Which is why I'm not hammering the under when we're talking on the betting side of things. I am taking a little bit of I have put some down on the Lions to win outright, because right now on DraftKings, you get a little juice at plus 105. And I will always take juice for the Lions. Not a lot, because I do think being down Aiden Hutchinson is going to be problematic. But yeah, in terms of the money line, give me a little juice on the Lions, but I love it in terms of fantasy output. The Philadelphia Eagles play their vaunted rivals, the New York Football Giants, a battle of 3-2 at 2-4. The Giants are getting 3 points as home dogs. The over-under 42.5 feels gross. Kind of makes a lot of fantasy-relevant players feel bogged down. How do you see this game going, and is there a player you're excited on or some players you're really down on?
This one's interesting. I think on the surface, everyone's going to go Saquon revenge, Saquon revenge, Saquon revenge. I don't think that's wrong. I don't know what to do. I put him at running back three. It's not a great matchup playing against the Giants for running backs. So I have him as three. As far as the Giant side of things go, I kind of went with the assumption that Singletary will be ready for this one. So I have Tracy and Singletary as the aggressively ranked players. Obviously Gray, not, that's kind of what I mean by aggressively ranked, not aggressively in ranking, but I put Tracy at 26 and Singletary at 28. And I did that because of proven power, proven explosiveness. And I think a receiving role for Tracy, or whichever way you want to phrase it. I think when Singletary returns, I think Tracy's going to have a role in some capacity, whether it's receiving or running the football. I think he's proven that. You can't put that genie back in the bottle. He gives you an opportunity to sustain plays on offense. Neighbors is back in this game. We could see a little, I mean, if there was ever a time for the Giants to try to do something, it's, hey, we found a running back and Neighbors is back and Slayton looked all right. Wandale looked all right. Theo Johnson's breaking tackles. Like, this feels like the best we've seen the Giants this past weekend against Cincinnati. And now you add Malik Neighbors. I'm interested here. Neighbors, I have as my, again, wide receiver five. Great matchup. Hard to go against it. Philadelphia, A.J. Brown. Is A.J. Brown maybe the MVP right now? A wide receiver? Wide receiver MVP in fantasy football? Is that too weird of a question? Because, like, if he doesn't get hurt, I know Malik Neighbors has been a sick value, but if he doesn't get hurt, he's averaging 23.25 fantasy points per game right now in PPR, which is number one among everybody. He's averaging 9.5 targets per game. Per game right now, which is like fifth behind Neighbors and Garrett Wilson and Wandale. He's been really good.
He's my runner up, and that's because if you're going to base it on value, Chris Godwin's been so fucking good. Chris Godwin has either propelled your build to the top of the league or has kept you in the playoff hunt, because he's just provided insane value so far this season. But Brown's right there. I mean, of all the guys that you had to take in the first round, he's been great. But, I mean, Chase is starting to turn it up. Amon-Ra's been quietly great. So I'm not quite there yet, because I think Godwin just brings that crazy, crazy value at receiver. Overall in this game, like, I like the players. I'm starting my studs. But I would say it this way. I've ranked them all conservatively in relativity to their skill set. Meaning, I have Brown at 7, but in a good matchup, Brown's 3. I have Barkley at 5, but in a good matchup, he's 1. I have Devontae Smith at 16, but in a better play, he's 14-12. So I'm in on these guys. I'm playing my studs, but I'm not exactly hyped about all of them. Malik Neighbors also, I'm at 6, but in a better matchup, he's top 3, you know? So I have downshifted. In terms of the running backs for the New York Giants, if Singleton's healthy, I hate both of them, 34 and 37. I just don't know how it will play. I don't know how many targets will go to Tracy if Malik Neighbors is back. And I will add one thing before we move on. about what you just mentioned. You just mentioned the Giants are playing better, I think, than people realize. Vegas realizes it. To take the Giants outright, it's only plus 140. And I think I'm going to put a little on that. But this feels like a couple weeks ago, this would have been 275, 250, 225 at the least. The fact that it's at 140 and trending closer to zero, closer to, you know, the even mark, feels like Vegas understands that Brian Daboll's got the guys playing pretty good. And this isn't as much of a lopsided affair as it probably was thought of a month ago.
They lost to the Commanders by 3 on the road. They lost to the Cowboys by 5 at home. They were down by 3 against the Bengals until 3 minutes left in that game. They beat the Browns. They beat the Seahawks. I don't think the Giants are as shit as they seem. They're going to be in the game.
I think they're going to be in the game. We're an hour in, and you're like, damn, you're not even at the 4 o'clock games left yet. Well, that's because there's only 3 of them, okay? This is the worst week for that 4 o'clock window probably on the season. This sucks. 3 games, and we're going to breeze through all of them because there's really not much to talk about. And we're going to start with the Las Vegas Raiders and their 2-4 record. Head over to La La Land to take on the Rams and their 1-4 record. The Raiders are 6.5-point underdogs on the road. Over-under 43.5 is gross. Kyren Williams is awesome. Kyren Williams, for me, is my running back 2. Other than that, in this entire game, Bowers at tight end 2. Those are the only 2 players that I give a rat's patootie about. Do you have anything to add there?
Speaking of fantasy MVP, I mean, Bowers with 4 top 5 finishes at the tight end position in 6 weeks as a rookie, in the first 6 yeah. weeks of your rookie yep. campaign, is shit dreams are made of, with
yeah,
you know, 31, 34, 25, 23% target shares. And now Davante Adams is gone. I've seen people come out and go, Jacoby Myers, Jacoby Myers, Jacoby Myers. It's like, yeah, Jacoby Myers, but how much more can Bowers, how much, like, have you seen the Harold Fannin Bowling Green stats this year? The tight end from Bowling Green.
I love Harold Fannin. He's been carrying my C2C team, baby.
Bro, his target share is like 55%.
Oh, it's insane. It's absolutely insanity.
Bowers might hit a game with 40% target share.
You're not lying. Which
is fucking nuts in the NFL for a tight end to have a 40% target share. 34, 31 the last 2 weeks. With, again, Davante Adams been hurt. Now there's not even a thought that Davante Adams is there.
He's not even in the building. They're not even having to deal with his BS.
Yeah. So Travis Kelce had a 38% target share in week 4. You go back to last year, all the target shares that Kelce had never crested 40, never even crested 33. 35 was his best, I guess, 1 week. I can go back to multiple weeks here with TK. 33%, 31%. He had a 50% target share game in the playoffs, Kelce did, in 2022. But you know what? This is my point. Is like, first off, this cat might be the tight end 1 in Dynasty.
All right. The thing about this, this is my rant about, and I know this game was supposed to be quick, but this is what happens. Things spark between us, and we just have to talk it out. Why do we have to make things difficult in the fantasy world? This guy was the tight end 1 in Dynasty 2 years ago at Georgia. And yeah. Now we're all going to contemplate if he's tight end 1. What the fuck are we doing? What are we doing? This guy in seasonal formats was a savior. Kittle right now is the tight end 1 in warp. But Kittle has missed games. Kittle has been the reason why you haven't had a tight end of consequence multiple times. Then you have Brock Bowers, who's in the top 18 and has played all 6 games. He's a top 20 warp player. The next closest is Cole Kmet at 38, and no one even cares about Cole Kmet or have even benefited from his points being in your lineup. The next one, Dallas Goedert. And Dallas Goedert starts to fall off tremendously. He's 76th overall player. The tight end position this year, Cody, has been so invaluable for seasonal formats, except for one player, Brock Bowers. And then on Dynasty, what are we doing? We were all jumping through hoops last year. Sam Laporta, this and that. Oh, my God, we found our new tight end 1. No, everyone, it's always been Brock Bowers. The torch was Travis Kelce to Brock Bowers. It was written in the stars years ago. Why are we acting like we discovered fire when light bulbs are already being used? This is insanity. People are already trying to put themselves in a tizzy to say, is he tight end one? I'm going to go out on a limb here. Brock Bowers is tight end one. Brock Bowers has been fucking tight end one in Dynasty for 3 years, and he's going to kill it, and we're going to now say it's not him? Stop making it difficult. You're right. Brock Bowers has been awesome this year. Next game on the slate, the Carolina Panthers head to the nation's capital to take on the Washington Commanders. Dave Canales and company are 8-point underdogs. Over under, Cody, get ready for this. 51.5. 51.5.
I mean, the Panthers have allowed 4 touchdowns a game. Like, that's their standalone stat, is that they allow the most touchdowns per game. They've allowed 34. They've allowed 36 points per game the last 3 since that 36-22 win against the Raiders on the road. This team's not going to win another game the rest of the season. And you're talking about a Washington Commanders team that, yes, they lost 30-23 last week against Baltimore, but they themselves averaged, get this, Maddie, 38 points per game the last 3 before that. And now they're going to Carolina, where Carolina's giving up 36 points per game. This team's going to boat race the Panthers, like most teams have the last couple weeks. Caleb boat raced them. Kirk boat raced them. The Bengals boat raced them. Jaden boat raced them. That's why we're plugging in Jaden Daniels as a top 2 play this week. That's why we're playing Terry McLaurin. That's why we're playing, you know, shit, you might want to get dicey and play some Zach Ertz. I'm playing Zach Ertz. That's why you're playing Austin Ekeler. It's number 1 matchup for running backs this week. If Brian Robinson's back, you're playing Brian Robinson. Shit, you could probably tell yourself a story to play Jeremy McNichols because he's probably going to get the whole 4th quarter. You could probably tell yourself something along the lines of, hey, what about Luke McCaffrey or De'Ami Brown? I mean, you can tell yourself a story or 2 or 3 or 4. You might not sleep well, but you can tell it to yourself. This is a good football team, the Commanders are. And this is a bounce back spot. They're going to go down to Carolina. They just lost one of the East Coast battles, right? They go north, they lose to Baltimore. You go south, you walk a dog. That's what they're going to do. Actually, it's not in Carolina. I rephrased that. It's at home.
You still technically do go south, though.
Technically, yeah, you're south down 95. Carolina's coming up to see you. This is going to be a walk. This is going to be a walk. And on the Carolina side,
Chuba, Deontay.
Come on.
I'll play Deontay. I got Deontay at 17. He's been great with the volume. And Chuba's been great. I got him as a top 10 play. The matchup's there.
Top 10 for Chuba. Gosh.
Yep. Chuba's been a top 30 warp player this year. He's pushing 0.7 warp overall, running back 11 on the season. Until Jonathan Brooks laces him up, it's Chuba Hubbard based on volume, and I don't care. Because in the club, we all got 14. Okay, we're not that far off. It's not crazy.
But, like, yeah, it's hard to argue. He's got 18 touches a game. I mean, where do you have Xavier Leggett?
49, 48. You know who is coming up my rankings, though, is Jadeveon Sanders. The volume gets up, he's going up. I still met tight end 22. He's really not a play in most formats, but a good game is going to propel him right around inside the top 15, because he only has to clear the hurdles of like Tyler Conklin, Kate Otten, Dalton Schultz. These guys aren't world beaters, and I think he's still talented.
I think that's fair. I think Sanders has the talent to do it. I put him at tight end 24. I don't know. I hate this fucking Carolina offense. Do you think they're going to go back to Bryce?
They are. Yeah, because if you're not going to win with Dalton, there's no reason to not play Bryce Young. Because if David Tepper's crazy enough that if they land at the 101, the only reason why they're not going to take Shadur is because primetime ain't going to fucking let them. But they'll get Carson Beck. They'll get Jalen Milroe. Why wouldn't they take another crack at quarterback if they know that Young isn't the guy?
What a fucking mess.
It's a mess.
They're just going to fucking ruin a bunch of these quarterbacks, aren't they?
Yeah, until David Tepper learns how to implement a program that he's not involved in as a hedge fund manager, not really a head football coach up in the suites there. But I also want real quick, I'm going to poke a little fun at this take. Oh, Ben's in it. He's way better than Jadeveon Sanders in Dynasty. Time is a flat circle. I know Ben Sinnott came off the board first, but Sanders is the tight end 2 in the class right now, until proven otherwise. Not saying much. Not saying much.
I'd be careful with that one.
I will not be. I like what I'm seeing out of Sanders, and I don't know what I've seen out of Sinnott because I haven't seen Jack Squat.
This guy named Zach Ertz is in front of him. Don't do this. Don't do this.
Don't do what? Don't do what?
Brother, he's attached to Jaden Daniels. He's really good.
Right. And if they had, if he was really good, he'd get more snips than he's getting.
Trey McBride.
What about Trey McBride?
Trey
McBride took some time after Ertz. He didn't play with Zach Ertz on the field at the same time. He didn't have breakout games with Zach Ertz on the field, Cody.
Not real breakout games.
He was completely irrelevant with Zach Ertz ahead of him.
No, but he didn't. I mean, there's right. We haven't gotten exactly. An opportunity to see Sinnott in the spot.
All right, we're gonna have to make a future bet on. And you never paid your fucking bet for losing the Drake May.
We never came to a conclusion of what it would be. We talked about it for goddamn 3 days and never came to a conclusion.
Because we were looking at the vibes, talk about it, and the vibes were I was drunk walking around the King Street Market and couldn't come to a decision.
I think I heard, I thought what it was going to end up was I was going to end up with a Spencer Rattler fathead above my, you know.
No, because it got to the point where we were all drunk enough and my wife was throwing out tattoos and rat tails versus mullets and all this other insane things that never came to fruition. That's why we should have just had some. We'll have to do it next time. Next matchup, and we're going to make this super quick. We promise the Chiefs head to the 49ers. The Chiefs are actually underdogs, a point and a half as road underdogs. 47 over under. Feels like play everything. Everything that you're accustomed to playing, play. Do have one question on both sides of the ball. One, what do we do with the Niners running back situation? Second question, where do you have Juju Smith-Schuster? And then we'll move on.
Juju Smith-Schuster is currently my wide receiver 34. Where do you have him?
25.
Okay. I want to put him higher. I think I need like a day or two to like continue to talk myself into that one. Same
You're
with
the talk me into Juju. You talked me into Juju.
I know, but it's just like another week, you know, they're coming off of a bye. I need to hear some stuff or see some stuff to see what happens with this. The San Francisco backfield's horrible matchup. Kansas City's a bottom three matchup for running backs. I have Mason at 17. I don't know. I don't know if Mason's going to play. If he is, I think I have him there. I'm probably going to keep him right there back to back with Javonte and Austin Ekeler. I'll probably end up bumping those two guys ahead of him. Even if he does play, Garendo, I put at 27.
Okay.
Is that too hot?
No, I think it just proves the uncertainty of the injury situation. So that's why I agree with it. I have, you know, Jordan Mason at 28 because I don't know where is. He'll go up a little bit if he's healthy. Obviously, if he's out, he'll come out altogether. And Garendo, who I have at 45, will probably go into that spot. It's all really just kind of dictating health at that point. Let's keep it moving because there's really everything else in that game is pretty much standard practice. Jets head to Pittsburgh, 2.5-point favorites with their 2-4 record, even though the Pittsburgh Steelers are 4-2, 38.5 over under is absolute dog water. Let's start here. Who plays quarterback for the Steelers?
Well, the video that came out this morning or last night was Russ with a little play action boot, and it kind of looked like he still had a little bit of tightness in that calf.
I was going to say he looked like he was doing a walkthrough.
He didn't look limber.
Yes. And the reason why it looked like he was in walkthrough mode was because then they showed Justin Fields taking the snap and it looked like faster, quicker. It looked better. Russell, it looked like he did not expect to play, but that's just one clip, one tiny clip.
Well, yeah, but you're spot on. The problem is that Fields is going to play regardless. He's not going to maybe start. But he's going to play regardless. Like this is exactly what I said in training camp. Was that at the time Russ was practicing, and Russ was clearly the better quarterback, but that there's a definitive role for Fields in the red zone. So don't be shocked. And if they do give you any juice on anytime touchdowns, take it with Justin Fields because they get in the red zone, they're bringing Fields in to run a RPO, yeah, to run boots, to do all this stuff with Najee and, you know, when Cordero was in there, that was the three-headed. That was the – don't be surprised when they get to the five-yard line at some point this week, next week, and Fields is down there in gun with Najee and Cordero flanking him. Like, that is – that's a tough situation to deal with. Big RPO here. He can either hand it off to Najee. He can pull and run this way. He can turn and throw a lob to Cordero. Like, there's a lot you can do with that. So I think Russ starts, but I think Justin Fields plays plenty. I have both the guys ranked. Horrible matchup for quarterbacks. I have both guys ranked 24 and 25 in this one. Where, oh, where, Matty Kewem, do you have Davante Adams?
So I have Davante at wide receiver 26. But that's because I'm not sure if he's going to play. If it comes out he's for sure, right, then I think I'll end up putting him probably in the 15-16 range and then drop Garrett Wilson to 26.
The day that he got to New York, he was on Pat McAfee show with Rodgers, and he was asked, I think Pat asked him, like, is he going to play? It's going to take you guys a long time to get ready. And Rodgers goes, yeah, it's going to take us a long time to get ready. So I'm not sure if he's going to play this weekend. Like, and he was completely fucking with him. Like, he's like, I'm not sure if he's going to play.
He's been resting for 3 weeks for this game.
Huh?
Davante Adams has been resting and preparing to play in Pittsburgh Sunday Night Football for 3 fucking weeks.
Yeah. So I put him at 10. It's a tough matchup. He's got Joey Porter Jr., but I think I still like Tay no matter what. I mean, again, we know what this does. We know even if he doesn't have a pure offensive understanding, that all we need is a can, Ruby. And it's like, boom, it's a 3 yard rip to Adams. And then Adams can create 10, 12 yards after catch. And the guy's going to end up with 7 or 8 or 9 targets. The guy's going to end up with 6 catches. He's probably going to end up with somewhere between 40 and 90 receiving yards and probably score a touchdown.
Yeah, I'm making the swap right now. I'm going to swap Wilson because I have Wilson at 11, Devontae at 26. So now I'm making the swap. Yeah, now I'm swapping them. And I think Devontae will end up settling, like I said, 15-16 range, but you can head over to southharmonff.com to check out my weekly rankings. They're updating every day. I want to ask you this in a big picture sense because I think it's very important. Does the arrival of Devontae Adams nuke Garrett Wilson rest of season?
No, I think, well, I mean, yes, but no. I think name value wise, you're going to be like, whoa, he's going to get so fucked. But I think after the first couple weeks wear off, Wilson's going to get plenty of work because you can't cover both. These are two of the best receivers in all of football, period. People want to hate on Garrett Wilson all they want, but Garrett Wilson's really fucking good. I mean, you saw it on that split, that route that he caught the ball and he split those defenders and broke tackles and stops and goes like, you know, like Tyreek-esque stuff. Like, he's a really, really fucking good receiver. But people, for some reason, are like, this guy's overrated. Like Byron Lambert, my guy at Roster Watches, you know, he runs the damn Twitter account basically because he just tweets out maniacal shit all day. He's like, is Terry McLaurin? He phrased it somewhere like, you know, Terry McLaurin's been more impressive than Garrett Wilson, Olave, or JSN. And I'm like, bro, Terry McLaurin's played 6 seasons. Or 5 seasons, these 3 guys haven't combined for 5 seasons. Garrett Wilson's so clearly better than Terry McLaurin right now.
Terry McLaurin's clearly better.
I mean, Terry McLaurin's at back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back 5,000-yard seasons. But Garrett Wilson, on paper, you would rather take Garrett Wilson over Terry McLaurin. And I think it'd be a tough conversation between Olave and McLaurin at this point. And I'd probably still lean Olave. And I love Terry McLaurin. But I don't think it's a real question. Garrett Wilson's a super talented receiver that I think – multiple things can go into him not being a superstar right now in New York. And a lot of it can have to do with an offensive line, connection with Rodgers. Rodgers loves his guys to do certain stuff. That's why you saw Lazard getting targets. Wilson's just a different guy.
Wilson, to me, is awesome. He's, despite the down year, and I use air quotes there because it's not a down year, he's still the wide receiver 7 in wins over replacement. He's a top 13 WARP player in fantasy football. He's still awesome. And I use the term nuke because that's the term being thrown around. I don't think it nukes his value, but I do think we now have to expect him to be a wide receiver 27 on the year type of guy. I do think we're going to be frustrated when Alan Lazard has better games than him because the role in which Alan Lazard plays is good in the Aaron Rodgers offense. And the reason why he's not a top 10 player rest of season or top 10 receiver rest of season like I had him at is because the reason why Aaron Rodgers' receivers have been special, his wide receiver 1 has been special, is because exactly what we saw over the last 2 weeks. Going to him 30 times in 2 games, throwing it to him at 4th and 1 on the 1, that's going to Devontae. And I don't think anything can be tell me otherwise. I don't care about the skill set of Garrett Wilson. This team needs so much, including to bring back its own fucking player in Hassan Reddick. And they still went out and traded potentially a 2nd-round pick for a luxury item. This is the quintessential Maserati outside of the trailer park meme, where they need so much, but they use what they had to get something they didn't need. They did not need Devontae. Garrett Wilson at this point in his stage is as good as Davante Adams. Problem is, Aaron Rodgers run the show. Aaron Rodgers wanted Davante Adams, and the reason why he wanted him is to do all the things he's done throughout their career. Throw it to him in fourth and one on the one. Throw it to him 32 in the 49. Get him the ball 12 times in a game. Get him the ball 22 times in a game. That sucks for Garrett Wilson the rest of the season, but I do think in Dynasty, it presents a great buying opportunity here soon enough. I wouldn't get hasty now in a couple weeks.
Waddle situation or Wilson situation?
Wilson. Just because of Wilson.
With Tua back.
I still take Wilson's just so good. Wilson is just so good that I think, but I also think this is likely in this day and age. There's a non-zero chance. I'd actually put it a lot higher than non-zero that Garrett Wilson's trying to shoot his way out of New York in July or whenever they do that, June, May, whenever it is. That Garrett Wilson's saying, fuck you, trade me, and gets traded because they'll choose Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams. So I'm still in, and I still think he's awesome. I just don't think that I think the days of top 10 wide receiver are over. We're looking at the tail end of a wide receiver 2, wide receiver 3 type player for fantasy, which sucks. That sucks. All right, now let's do the double dip. Back to the double dip Monday night game. Get your ESPN Plus ready to rock. The Baltimore Ravens head to Tampa to take on the Buccaneers, a battle of 4-2 teams. Buccaneers are 3.5-point underdogs at home. The over-under of 49.5 does not disappoint. Is it really just smoke him if you got him here? Is there any analysis here?
Running back for Tampa. So Rashad White is back to practicing today. This popped up mere 60 seconds ago. Rashad White's back as well as Graham Barton, all practicing today after missing Sunday's game. The one thing I read before the show was that could potentially be a three-headed monster. So I ranked it as such. I put Bucky at running back 30. I put White at 35, and I put Tucker at 40.
Bro, that's fucking crazy. We had almost identical, just the names are different. I have White at 30, Bucky at 35, and then I have Sean Tucker at 54. Someone has to get nuked. Somebody has to get nuked.
The problem with Tucker, why I wouldn't nuke him, is because he is the most explosion of the three.
I agree. I do agree there. I like Tucker. I think he's still a buy. Because I think there is a possibility where he either climbs the depth chart enough or another injury happens. I think what he showed in one game is enough to be interested as much as you've been interested in your estimates, your Trey Bensons, your Kendre Millers in Dynasty, your Kimani Vidals, your Braylon Allens. I think all of these names that we've heard for Dynasty running backs, because of that one game, you have to put Sean Tucker in that conversation. You just have to. It's a running back. So I like Sean Tucker. I'm trying to buy Sean Tucker where I can. My issue is it's a horrible time, and if it is a three-headed monster, there's a good chance that he just gets cucked. Kind of like Ty Johnson did on Sunday Night Football, right? Ty Johnson comes out first play of the game, rips a 12-yarder. We don't see him until the third quarter. Ray Davis goes on to have a fantastic game, but it's like, damn, Ty Johnson, he looked pretty good. I thought he was going to have a bigger role without James Cook. Turns out, no. So I'm a little hesitant on Tucker.
Is this the upset of the week?
Is this the upset of the
both week? Teams are 4-2, but is Tampa upsetting Baltimore Monday Night Football?
Tampa winning this game would be an upset for sure. For sure. I think yes. I think Baker's game. Baker knows the Ravens. Baker's been pretty decent against the Ravens, if I'm not mistaken. And the thing about the Ravens is they don't have a good defense. They don't. They can stop the run, but we just talked about who gives a fuck about the Buccaneers' run. They don't even care about their run. But the Ravens have a tough time stopping big-time receivers, big-play receivers, and they have a tough time stopping slot receivers. That might be the best. I mean, the Buccaneers might have the best combo of that right now in football, with the way Godwin's playing, the way Evans has been. And the Ravens don't generate a lot of pass rush. They just don't. And the Bucs give Baker a lot of time to throw. And if he has a lot of time to throw, he's at a stage of his career, he will dice up this defense. So I do think there's an upset, and I do think this is a shootout game. This is a fantastic fantasy affair. Last game on the Week 7 slate. And I can't wait to get your thoughts here on this game, because we kind of talked pre-show, we kind of talked earlier, but now we're going to dive into it as the last game on the slate. 3-2, Los Angeles, Jim Harbaugh's go to Arizona to take on the 2-4 Arizona Cardinals. Coming into town, the Chargers are actually 2.5-point favorites on the road. Over-under of 43.5 seems very dependent on the Cardinals being able to dictate their offense. Let's start with the Cardinals. Are you ranking Marvin Harrison Jr.?
No.
Me neither.
He's had a concussion. Neighbors missed 2 weeks. Marv had a concussion. I don't think Marv's going to play. Ladd McConkey had a concussion. I don't think Ladd's going to play. Michael Wilson's likely the wide receiver one for the Cardinals this week. I think it's a McBride week, if anything, in this situation. I moved him up to, let's see, where did I have him? I moved him up to tight end four behind Laporta. You could make a case to put him higher. I haven't. As far as running backs go, I mean, you got your Connor. You're never going to not play Connor if you have Connor in your roster. As far as the Chargers go, though, what do you do with the Vidal stuff? Top 10 matchup this week.
I think Vidal is a screaming sell in seasonal formats because I think you can get a no doubt contributor on a weekly basis. Vidal alone, I think, puts you at the Tony Pollard table. You're probably a piece away from getting a Josh Jacobs or David Montgomery. So in seasonal, I'm selling Vidal because there was no volume there. It was one play. It's still the J.K. Dobbins show. Now, Dobbins has been injury prone, so yeah, he could get hurt, and then Vidal wheels up. But I think even with Vidal getting the number one role on this offense, you're able to move him now at similar value. So if you don't have to move him, don't. But if you need a weekly starter and you picked up Vidal, now's the time to move him because, like I said, even if Vidal becomes good, even, I mean, if he gets the number one role, he's still probably, what, a weekly 12 to 15 running back on a weekly basis, you know, going into the week? I think you can get that now or get close to it right now in seasonal.
Where'd you rank him this week?
Vidal, I have him at 47. He's in the Braylon Allen, the Justice Hill, Isaac Grizendo, Pierre Strong, Zach Charbonnet. He's in the group of backups that have like minority upside, you know, like have that chance because they're good, but the volume ain't there. And I don't think the volume gets there this week. No, in Dynasty, he's a hold or buy. You know, I mean, come on, what are we doing here? It's pretty obvious in Dynasty what you do with that running back.
I think Vidal's a better play than the rest of those guys you just listed off this week.
So then what range do you have him in?
33.
So you have him in
Madison last year.
Madison, okay. Okay. See, I think Madison's it's disgusting, but Madison's going to get the volume. I think you take away the touchdown, it's not an impressive game. And I don't know if he gets more volume. Now, if he gets more volume this week, then he goes skyrocketing.
What about Algier?
Oh, Algier's there, man. I got Algier. He's going to be a weekly start for me in fantasy. Right now, I'm at running back 32 right now, right ahead of Madison. And you could make the argument that you should play Algier over Rashad White this week.
Yeah, I could do. Yeah. 100%. 100%.
He's just Algier's just proving philosophically they should have never been in the Bijan Robinson business. How dumb of a pick that was. Not that Bijan's not great. It's that they had somebody who could have been a perennial 1,000-yard rusher, can catch the ball, can do it all. He's built like a brick shit house. There was just no reason to use a top 10 pick on a running back when you have
Algier
this guy
can do it all. I don't understand it.
Algier was a linebacker. He could play fucking special teams and knock the lid off somebody.
And you can't take him off the field. That's the problem. He goes in there and rips off 8, 8, 8. And you're like, well, let's put Bijan in so he can gain 4 yards. It's like, how about we keep Algier in here and knock the fucking shit off of these linebackers?
Yeah, let's use Bijan to get 4, or we can use Tyler Algier to get 3.7. It was malpractice from Super Bowl winning Terry Fontenot. I do want to ask you this before we get on out of here. We talked. You mentioned briefly that Ladd McConkey was dealing with a concussion that could keep him out. Is there a receiver on the Chargers that you are buying into if McConkey is out? And if he's not out, are you relying on McConkey?
Yeah, if McConkey's in, you have to rely on McConkey as the guy. And I still don't feel great about that. But Quentin Johnston is supposed to be dealing with an ankle injury and McConkey with a concussion. That opens the door. DJ Chark opened up his 21-day window. I'm not sure that means he's going to play this weekend. I really doubt it. So we saw Simi Fehoko get some action this past weekend. He had a nice ball down the sideline. I don't know. I don't think you could even convince me to play a Simi Fehoko this week, but I guess if both of those guys, if both of McConkey and Quentin Johnston are down, I could see playing a Fehoko who had 2 for 44 in this game. But the guy that I'm going to jump in on is going to be Josh Palmer. I put Josh Palmer up 27th overall. He's only averaging 3.25 targets per game so far in the season. So, again, it's not like it's this slam dunk play by any means. It's the Chargers offense, but we've seen Palmer do it. We've seen Palmer go 6 for 85 a multitude of times in his career. It's been inconsistent, but I do believe that his connection with Justin Herbert is good enough that with both of these guys down, especially, they know they can believe in Josh Palmer and roll with Josh Palmer in a given week, especially on Monday Night Football against the Arizona Cardinals, who are they're the number seven matchup overall for wide receivers right now. Again, this guy has had targets during the season, 4-2, 4-3. He's been targeted. This last week, he had 2 for 38. I don't think it would be outrageous to see Palmer jump up into that top 30 area.
I really hope McConkey is healthy, because this could be a sneaky good game for Justin Herbert. Herbert has a 2.86. He gets 2.8 seconds to throw the football. It's the 10th longest in the NFL. Meanwhile, the Cardinals generate the fourth lowest pressure rate in the NFL. So a lot of time for a big arm like Justin Herbert could result in a very high efficient game where they get out to a potential lead, because they're not going to be pretty, but they're going to be successful. The Los Angeles Chargers are definitely a potential playoff team given the landscape of the AFC. That's going to do it. That's going to wrap up the Week 7 walkthrough. I'm Maddie Kiwoom. He's Cody Carpenter. I almost call myself Maddie Carpenter and Cody Kiwoom. I guess that's what happens when the bros bro out for a weekend with the wives. With the wives. We didn't get married, people. That is weird. No diddy. Anyway, that's the show. Thank you so much. Head on over to southharmonff.com. Get all the articles. Get the Warp Tool. Get the weekly rankings. Get it all. Join the Patreon, patreon.com/southharmon. And then, of course, head over to YouTube, South Harmon FF on YouTube, and pick up all the shows, the live streams, the videos. It's all right there on YouTube. But most importantly, have a great Week 7, and we will talk to you next week. Peace.